Thank you very much. I think I first met Peter maybe 1988 or 87. I think he was at Berkeley on a sabbatical. However, I had the privilege of being Peter's colleague for 17 years. And I know he's much admired for his mathematical contributions, which we have all talked about. But we, as young faculty at the University of Wisconsin, what we admired him the most was for his creation of Math 951. Math 951 was the topology seminar. And somehow, Peter managed to make that count as a course. It was something he arranged before I arrived, and we would alternate that among the faculty. So it was always a wonderful thing. And I always, whenever it was my turn to do that, I always felt very grateful to Peter for his wisdom and real talent. Okay? So anyway, it was always a pleasure to work with Peter, and his support for me when I was a young faculty member is very important for me. Anyway, it's a well-deserved honor. Okay, so I'm going to talk about some work. Some joint work with Fred Cohen and with a former student of mine, Enrique Torres. And let me start out by defining the basic objects. So I'm going to take gamma to be a finitely generated discrete group, and G is going to be, at least at this point, a Lie group. And the basic object we want to consider is the following. I want to take HOM gamma G, which is the set of all homomorphisms . Now, we want to think of this as a topological space. So for that, one way of thinking of this is as follows. Suppose we take a free group on R letters, mapping onto gamma. Then this induces an inclusion. And if you have a free group on R letters, mapping into G, you can identify this with GDR. So you can think of it as a subspace sitting in there. And the for us, the motivation for this work, I should leave that up there, maybe. The motivation for this work was the following. Suppose you have the homomorphism from gamma to G, then this will induce a map from the classifying space of gamma to the classifying space of G. In fact, it's going to be a base map. And if we take components, I think of this of the homotopy, then in fact, we can go to based homotopy classes of maps between the classifying spaces. And this is going to factor to the components. So the basic question, which one may ask, is the following. What information is carried with E? So this, in topologists would say, what is the information about bundles, the principal G bundles, over B gamma, to assume that B gamma is a finite type, which come from representations.
So what can you say? E, what are the contributions from representation theory to bundles?
Of course, once you look at this diagram, you might say, well, these spaces happen to be rather interesting. What can we say more generally about the topology? You could ask, what can we say about pi naught? Pi naught, this form. And once you get really going, what can you say about the homotopy type of the spaces of homomorphisms, or about their cohomology? And compute the cohomology, or understand the homotopy type of these spaces. Now, when you define your own problem, it's a good thing, because, for example, here we have two variables to play with, gamma and g. So if we get stuck in one direction, we can always move in another, and we can always move the goals along with us, right? So so you really want to try to find sensible classes of groups for which you can answer this type of question. So let me give you a few examples of the sorts of results that one can obtain, and also the types of groups that you can look at. And I will do my best to connect this lecture with Peter's favorite topic, which are the hyperplane arrangements. So here's an example. Let's take gamma to be equal to the fundamental group of a surface, where Mg is a Riemann surface, orientable Riemann surface. Of genus G. And let's say G to be a connected, compact, maybe semi-simple now in this case, oh, and let's take the genus G to be bigger than 1. So in this case, if you look at the map E, this is an equivalence. And of course, the classifying space is just Mg itself. And in fact, this can be identified with the fundamental group of G. This actually appears in, I guess, a paper by Jun Lee. Not very difficult result. And so you see, for example, that this space is path connected. If and only if G is simply connected. Now, what about genus 1? And this is right here, right? Yes. What about genus 1? Well, that is part of a more general class of groups. Let's consider gamma to be equal to Z to the R. Hmm? So the homotopy classes of maps from here to here. You have to use a co-vibration sequence and compute that. Where are you? Well, you can compute it afterwards. Okay. Now, here, if you take HOM, G, this you can think of as the ordered commuting
R tuples in G. And that's kind of an interesting space, just a priori. And now the basic result we can show is the following. If G is equal to a UN, SUN, or the symplectic group, or GLMC, then G is connected. And this has to do with the structure of these groups in terms of the fact that their maximal abelian subgroups are connected. Now, you can actually apply this to other classes of groups. So now let's get into the groups you might like. So let's take A to be an arrangement of hyperplanes, like that, hyperplanes, complex hyperplanes. And let's take MA, the corresponding space, that is H's. And now we take gamma to be equal to the fundamental group. And let's make the assumption here that this space is a spherical. Then you have the basic result, which says the following. The map from pi naught of Hom gamma to UN, this map, well, this is of course just MA to BUN is trivial. Even though we don't know that this thing is path connective, however, if you use this, and of course the hypothesis that we're using for this is the fact that this result over here for UN. So somehow it's possible to put together information about easy groups like the free abelian groups to get information about more complicated groups. And in particular, this implies that every bundle arising from a representation over MA is trivial under these hypotheses. Now, in the case of, you might wonder about a group which doesn't satisfy this. Well, in that case, you have the following result. So gamma as before then you can actually show that the number of components. Now let's take a group which is not in that list, ON, you can show that this is greater than or equal to the order of H1 of gamma with mod 2 coefficients times the order of H2 of gamma with mod 2 coefficients. And this is for N sufficiently large. So you get lots of components, and we see some the cohomology is playing a role in determining these components via the first two Stiefel-Whitney classes. And here I should say there's some work of ours with Ben Cohen, which is also relevant here. Now, one can try to compute then these invariants, pi naught and the cohomology, but at some point, what Fred and I realized is that it was better to consider these spaces of homomorphisms all at the same time when you have a particular source in mind. And in particular, the commuting R-tuples seem to be an interesting example to look at. And there is an analog in group theory, which comes from the descending temporal sequence in the free group. So what we're going to do now is give a simplicial approach to these objects. So now we change. And we think simplicially. And the idea will be to glue together all of these guys. So in this particular example, we'll be gluing all these guys together. Okay, so how do we do that? Well, we have to go back to some fairly classical constructions in algebraic topology. So for this part, it suffices for G to be a topological group. And now what we want to do is look at a construction for the universal G space, which is going to modify in a slight way as follows. So let's define the following. E Q G N is going to be, by definition, Hom G cross Hom here, gamma Q is equal to the Q stage of descending central series. For F N, the free group on N generators. So what we're going to do is define this. Now, we of course are what we're really going to do is first consider the following. So first consider the case when to understand what we're going to do with this, what we do is look at the following. Consider G to the N plus 1 and write this as G cross Hom Fn into G. Okay? And now here we can define the phase and degeneracy maps in the usual way. Now these are classical phase and degeneracy maps which make this into a simplicial set. They satisfy simplicial identities. Now the key observation is that in fact this will descend to this. And that's because you can think of these as being induced at the level of the free group as homomorphisms, and taking the stages of the descending central series, you can see, is functorial. So what this means then is that we can give these guys the structure of a simplicial set. Simplicial space, in fact, becomes simplicial space. Now this is familiar to topologists. When you're not doing this, what you will be doing is constructing a model for EG, which I believe is due to, was it Steenrod or is it Milgram? No, these guys. Miller's masters. No, Miller had the construction of a universal bundle, right? But he used joins. So this is a sort of a different way of using these simplicial constructions. Okay. So now, similarly, we can define B Q G N to be equal just to this guy. And you can define with DIs and FJs defined similarly basically what you do is that you omit the first variable, and then the one you have to do in S0, I guess, what you do is omit the first guy you have here, going to X2. So this is, it's very similar to when you construct BG, and this gives you B star of 2G, also a simplicial space. So now we have B star of QG mapping down to B star of QG. And well, this is a construction which we've done for any topological group. And what we'd like to do is discuss some of the properties here. So you can think of this as dividing out by the G action. Because remember, we have this extra variable here on the left, and we're dividing out by that. Now, given a simplicial space, you can take its geometric realization. So given E star QG, we can take its simplicial realization. In this space, we're going to call EQG. And similarly, we write B star QG, this realization, we can equal to. Let's see what we know about these guys. So the basic property is, well, first of all, so let's write down some basic properties. First of all, we have a principle G bundles. So like this, well, you have EQG maps to, you have a commutative diagram like this. And now here, in the limit, you have what you'd call E infinity G over B infinity G. Now, if you define this properly, you'd have gamma infinity equal to 1. So what you get here is just the usual universal bundle. Okay? So these are principal G bundles. So in other words, we have a filtration here of a usual classifying space. This is equal to, here is just equal to BG. Furthermore, this one, you can see, is actually this principal bundle, you're dividing out by a free G action. If you have a free G action like this, then what you can do is extend this to a bundle over BG. So this produces a bundle. So if you look at the classifying map of this, as right like this, we have this property 2. We have a bundle EQG and this is over BG. Now, in the case of a universal bundle, of course, this guy here is contractible. But no one has said that this guy here has to be contractible. In fact, we don't know at this point of the lecture. Okay, so it behooves us then to say some things about these spaces. So how does that connect to what we talked about here? Well, take the case when Q is equal to 2. We're particular interest in the case B2G is this space assembled from all commuting in tuples in G. Okay,
so somehow if we want to say things, if we can say things about this and maybe tease it apart in a smart way, then maybe we can go back and say something about the unstable pieces, at the same time have a more general understanding as to what's going on.
Okay, so now I'm going to give you some results. And all this is kind of preliminary because it's kind of work in progress. But let me give you some results about cohomology of the spaces.
Now the first result, let's see, if G, let's take the case when G is a compact connected Lie group.
Then, in fact, if you compute the cohomology of B2G, let me take here rational coefficients. This is isomorphic to the cohomology. Well, we take the flag. This is a maximal torus, T, cross BT is the classifying space of T. And you take the invariance under the Mile group. Now this calculation is due to Tom Baird, who I believe computed it for completely different reasons. But what we did is put together all his kind of unstable calculations in this simplicial mode. Of course, when you do the cohomology of a compact Lie group, it's like this, right?
Okay, now.
So the part for BT comes from BG?
From BG. Well, it comes from these commuting n-tuples, right? And elements in the maximal torus. The bundle over BG. And you're saying, oh yeah, so you can think of it as being compatible with that. Okay, now I have some predisposition towards finite groups, so we want to consider things about the cohomology when G is finite. What happens in that case? Well, the first thing you have is the following. Let's say the map from EQG to BG induces or has a nilpotent kernel in mod p cohomology. For all it actually follows in a straightforward way from some results of Quillen. Now the second thing you can say is if gamma, well, if G is nilpotent, not G, sorry, G is nilpotent of class C, then B C plus 1 G is equal to B Q G for all Q equal to C plus 1. And in fact, this is equal to B G. More generally, for any finite group, the sequence stabilizes, but it doesn't necessarily have to stabilize at B G. Now, what does this construction do? In what sense is it different from the ordinary classifying space for finite groups? Well, see, for finite groups, if you're computing over here, somehow you're considering all groups, to some degree, play a role in the cohomology calculations in different contexts, right? Especially if you have something like a P group, right? You understand that all groups have to play a role here. Over here, what you're doing is restricting yourself to certain families of subgroups. Particularly here, in the case with Q is equal to 2, you would be restricting yourself to the case of abelian subgroups. So what you consider then is the following family of subgroups, which are the A subgroups in G, such that so for example, Q is equal to 2, these would be the abelian subgroups, right? And this is closed under conjugation and taking subgroups. So now we want to try to understand the space BQG from the point of view of homotopy theory, and we have the following theorem. BQG is homotopy equivalent to the homotopy colimit over A and Q of G of the classifying spaces in this family. And furthermore, is a vibration of the form KQ goes to BQG, and then this goes to the classifying space of which is a not necessarily finite group, which we're going to call GQ. With the following properties, KQ is a finite dimensional complex. And GQ is this group defined by the family, namely the colimit of the A's as is finite dimensional and simply connected. So this sets up all the fundamental group. However, there's this fiber, and the obstruction to this being a spherical is, of course, continuing this curve. So a basic question here is, under what conditions is BQG? Is it a question, conjecture? It's always true? I don't know. Certainly, in all the examples which we have computed for finite groups, it has been a spherical. But you probably have to get a very complicated group for that not to hold. Now, there is a class of groups for which we know it's a spherical. Is that a nice class of groups? Let me give you those examples. Okay. So let G be a transitively commutative group. That means something like, say, GH equal to 1 and HK equal to 1 implies for G, say, for H not in the center of G. That's what it means for a group to be transitive commutative. I guess every group of order less than 24 is transitively commutative. And
Now for these groups, you can show the following theorem for these groups. If G is BC, then BQG is a spherical. And let me write here for two. It's the same, but let me just write it for two because it's easier to remember. And there is a stable homotopy equivalence well, the B2G can be modeled stably on all the p-cetal subgroups. So all the p-cetal subgroups appear. There's no conjugation here. But what you see here is that the groups which appear here, the torsion which is going to appear in the cohomology here, has to do only with the primes dividing the order of the group. And that's a general fact that can be proved. Oh, this means a one-point wedge, right? One-point union? P is BP, sorry. And let's see, a basic example. Let's give some numbers here, right? Let's see. For example, let's give a few numbers here. You can compute V2A5, for example. This, in fact, you can write as a wedge of V. There's 5 of V's, wedge of F10 of V3, wedge of 6 of V. Now, well, I think we need a hypothesis here that the center be trivial here. Center of G, or this one here. Otherwise, you have an amalgamation along the center. Now, let's now go back to this vibration. This will be known as Fred's favorite vibration. And because of the following, this is an interesting observation. If G is odd, of odd order, is odd, then the map in homology, just in H1, E1 of B to G. Oh, no, that's right. 2G here is not onto. So you have a vibration, so you have a long exact sequence in homology, right? So if you look at the map in H1, so the next term which would appear here would be H1 of BG, and then 0. Okay? But if this were onto, and this guy will have to be 0. However, the order of the group is odd. So by the Feit-Thompson theorem, this can happen. So anyway, so one of the project is to prove the Feit-Thompson theorem for TC groups using this. So, but speaking seriously, the point is that here, the homology here will have some very interesting, very natural functorial representations of G, which have to be considered, which have some very interesting properties, and the examples we've worked out do have these nice representations which appear there, which have really built in some of the structure of the group connected to the abelian subgroups. Okay, now we were going to say something about the unstable guys. Well, it turns out that
And in fact, you can do something with the stable homotopy of these guys. So let's define Fj to be equal, contained in Gn, and let's just say equal to the n tuples where at least j are equal to 1, right? 1 is a distinguished guy sitting there in G, so you can look at the n tuples where at least j of them are equal to 1. Then you can define SnQg to be equal to Hom Fn J intersect Fj. So then you have Fj Qg contained in S J minus 1 Q. Okay, so now what we have here is you have a simplicial space, which is this guy here, right? And then we have this filtration by these guys. And the basic result, which we have about this simplicial space, is that these pairs are always covibrations.
Whenever they're non-empty.
So this is, in fact, I guess they're NDR pairs. It's a condition of being simplicially NDR. So it's a simplicial space which has a very strong property, very good properties from the point of view of topology. Okay, now this condition is true whenever G is a closed subgroup of GLNT. So now we can apply some rather formal results about splittings of simplicial, the simplicial spaces, the spaces occurring in a simplicial space, to obtain the following theorem. If we take the suspension of Hom F and gamma Q G, G is above, G and GLNT closed. And this is homotopy equivalent to the wedge from K equals 1 up to N of the wedge. N choose K times of the suspension of Hom FK 1 gamma Q G over what happens there when J is equal to 1. So this is sort of a singular space where you're looking at these N tuples, these homomorphisms, where at least one of the coordinates is equal to 1. If you divide out by that, then these guys, using this filtration and taking a single suspension, you get a stable splitting like that. Moreover, the terms appearing here are stably equivalent to the filtration quotients F K of B QG on FK. So this is the stuff you get by looking everything up to the K simplex, and when you do this construction, you glue those things right up. You move to that.
This happens to be a special case of a very general decomposition theorem for simplicial complexes which satisfies covibration condition. Okay, so now I guess the work in progress would be to, first of all, determine when this holds or doesn't hold. It's a kind of example. This is a project for, right? And the other project is to try to understand what these pieces are. And there are some calculations, unstable calculations, which people there in the back row know a lot about. And it would be interesting to have some kind of systematic way of understanding how this decomposition works, because then you could recover. The thing about stable splittings is that they organize cohomology from the point of view of homotopy theory. So if for some formal reason you're seeing pieces of cohomology coming in, this sort of stable splitting kind of puts everything in the right perspective. Okay, I think I'll stop there.
Question? In the definition, you use the important quotients of the thing.
It is.
What if you replace Fn by nobody, Fn by Pn?
Fn by Pn? What do you mean?
The
pure break group. Would that work? Would you get the simplicial identities to work?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that. They have to be compatible with the relations you have there, right?
So what kind of sequence of groups do you need?
Yeah, so it's a functor on groups, right? So everything works and runs out by homomorphism. Right?
But you say you can play with
sort of. Oh, you can play. Well, you can take things like the p-adics, right? free. Then you're concentrating everything p locally, which is not a bad thing to do, right? But I think the simplicial construction is a little bit more rigid than what you're thinking about. If you want the unstable ones, right, then sure, take the pure break group, right, and try to understand, map some PN into some GLM, right, and what are the components and things like that, right? So.
I can do PN modulo gamma.
Yeah, you can still do that. Yeah, sure, you can do that, for sure. I'm not sure if the things would work then. Were you, Fred? So I think it's a bit more complicated, but perhaps. When you divide out by G, the spaces in general, like from the point of cohomology, they're much smaller. But indeed, you can recover the simplicial structure, and there should be a decomposition. This is kind of work in progress of this type with the representation. Those are, that's right. And there's the work of Borel and Friedman and these guys. So then one would hope to identify these terms from their calculations. But this argument here requires, you have to do some kind of equivariant version of that, so it's a little bit delicate. Yeah, exactly.